It is, I regret to inform you, Monday. And I am flailing and exhausted and look as though I've been dragged through a hedge backwards twice. The toddler and I, having already completed a school drop-off characterised by more melodrama than a German opera, have decided to go to the post office. On the plus side, it's one of those spring days that actually makes you want to spring. The world is bright, the jacaranda is exploding, the birds full of the joys of life swooping and squawking, and for the first time since summer, I smear sunscreen on both the toddler and myself, much to our mutual annoyance. Above us, an aeroplane cuts through the blue. I'm lathering sunscreen on his arms and legs and telling what he obviously believes to be a patently absurd lie about how there are hundreds of people inside that tiny aeroplane. Real people, sitting in the air above us. Some with colouring books, some watching Goldie Hawn movies. Heading off, some of them, on new adventures, some returning home. All those individual thoughts whizzing by over our heads. The toddler is grabbing my shirt. And when I follow his gaze, I see, much to my surprise, the woman from over the road who Gail calls
a bit of a shut-in by all accounts,
who keeps birds in a DIY aviary that covers her entire backyard. She's squatting down near the gutter, muttering quietly to herself. Well, that's what I think at first. She is, in fact, on further inspection, conversing with a lizard.
There you go,
she's saying to a blue-tongued lizard limping along the edge of the gutter. Its fat little leg is bound up in a torn piece of cotton and a wooden splint, like a tiny lizardy war veteran back from the front.
Rescued this one down at Merry Creek,
she says.
Bit of a run-in with a dog, I'd say.
Yikes, I say.
You can pat it,
she says, demonstrating a pantomime slow-mo single-finger pat of the lizard's head for the toddler, who takes a determined step backwards. The woman reaches into the pocket of her jacket, the kind of jacket a fisherman might wear, and produces a limp lettuce leaf.
There you go, Ruth Bader.
I think, she says, placing the lettuce leaf in front of the lizard and unfolding herself up to my level. You have a lizard called Ruth Bader, I ask. And then, idiotically, as in US Supreme Court Judge Ruth Bader Ginsburg, she nods matter-of-factly.
I rescue animals sometimes,
she tells me.
Hence the birds and the cats and Ruth Bader and a snake called Eddie.
I'm about to ask, but she says,
Eddie McGuire. I've had him for a while. They couldn't find a home for him because, I don't know, I suppose he is a python. Also,
she leans in confidentially.
I wouldn't say this to his face, but he's very boring and quite greedy.
I'm trying to think of something witty to say about Eddie McGuire, the boring, lazy snake. But the toddler is exerting all his weight to pull me down the street towards the excavators he can see digging up Nicholson Street, which I now realise we're going to have to inspect on our way to the post office. So I start making excuses. She says,
any sign of Alan?
And I remember that she had asked me on the weekend about Alan from over the road, who always used to stand out the front of his house, shirtless, watering his garden, but who hasn't been there much lately. The toddler is trying to climb a cast-iron fence now. I tell her that I saw one of the nurses in the little nursing hatchback going in to visit him this morning when I was taking the kids to school.
Oh,
she says, slightly put out.
Must have missed it.
Like an episode of something went to air that she didn't manage to catch. I say to her, I'm sorry, I'm completely hopeless. What's your name again? As though she may have told me once, and I've forgotten.
Susanna,
she says, bending down to pick up Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who has adapted to the splint and is attempting a wonky, doomed escape. Why Ruth Bader Ginsburg? I ask her. And she appears up in front of me again, lizard in hand. She looks sincerely into its little face.
Compact, no-nonsense little monster, this one,
she says to it. Then she looks at me.
But up close,
she says.
Very watchful eyes.
And ladies and gentlemen, this is Susanna, my neighbour, whom I have, by reason of whatever travesty I know not, never met. The toddler, who has sashayed all the way along the fence now, is shouting at me, and quite right too. So I call out goodbye to Ruth Bader and goodbye to Susanna, my newest and most interesting friend.
And just like that, I'm out of the house again. Got in touch with the homeless shelters today and the animal rescue people. There was a pause on the phone at first, and then Finn said,
"Oh, Suze, we'd hoped you'd be in touch soon."
It's nice the way people find ways to not say what they mean exactly, but get it across to you anyway. Took my newest recruit out for a walk this morning. Not the type you'd have had much time for. Blue tongue lizard, juvenile. Used to be you could walk down our street and see pretty much nobody. Maybe Alan out the front of his place. Now, though, people everywhere. I feel like calling out, "What on earth do you all do?" But then, of course, what do I do? Funny. I do still catch myself thinking like a person with a security pass and frequent flyer points. Other times I want to howl, none of it means anything to the strangers staring at their phones on the tram. Or that Alistair in his apartment. Although at least he's had to put his phone down this week and deal with his house guest. My phone is one of the things that dates me these days. It's the exact one I had back when it all fell away. All grubby and crack now. One good thing this week is being able to like people again. Like my new friend, dragged down the street by her child, off to look at the track works. But of course nobody thinks of the animals. That jackhammer is relentless.
We're standing on the side of the road watching the jackhammers and diggers demolish the street to put in more accessible tram stops, and the toddler will not be dragged away. It's strange that this noisy, filthy destruction zone should be a point of peace in my morning, as he stands and stares, shouting up the occasional comment, imploring me to look at this one or that one, but otherwise I am left to think. I stand amid the rubble, and I think of the things I love. I love stone fruit and ponytails and lit up nighttime tennis courts and that thing where you're sitting somewhere and your feet are dangling and you do little circles with them even though you're an adult now. And I love driveways with arches of trees over them and how watching someone you love coming towards you in a crowd when they haven't seen you yet can make you love them 1,000 times more. I love hot jam donut smell and peppercorn trees and cinnamon and cats in shop windows and the word dastardly and thunderstorms and science and cups of tea and you. We head to the post office. I dawdle a little on the corner to see if I can find any of the construction workers I sometimes encounter at the local cafe, but I can't. The toddler picks up a stick from the ground.
I'm so hungry.
I say dawdle, but this walk to the post office, which is about a block and a half away, is going to take us, allowing for pedestrian lights, approximately 800,000 years.
Beetle, beetle, beetle.
I am, for the moment, the sun on my back and a tiny little hand in mine, perfectly okay with that. Later, having waited in line with a woman called Olga and sent a postcard of a tram to Grandma, we run into Frankie from number 100 at the end of our street. She skates up to us on roller skates like a millennial punk feminist Charlie's Angel, does a tight little circle to bring herself to a stop. But the way she does it makes it look like a challenge in a dance-off. Bit more spin than strictly necessary.
Hey, so check it out.
She has removed a lollipop in order to speak to me, and her tongue and teeth are blue. She's looking at our new neighbour, Alistair. He's out on his tiny balcony, engaged in an intense conversation with a woman.
Been up there all day. What do you reckon? Girlfriend? Ex? He wishes?
She looks at me.
What? You think I'm putting too much thought into it? Strong chance. Strong chance. But see...
She circles us.
There's something going on. I bet your mate knows something.
She points at Susanna's window with her lollipop.
She'd be able to hear the whole show up there,
she says. And I wonder, vaguely, if she's high.
Better go,
she says.
Supposed to be studying.
I ask her what she's studying.
Oh, you know,
she says, waving her hand.
Art. The essence of the universe, the nature of self, human connection. So really, I mean, this is all homework.
She does a spin, her arms wide, taking in the whole day. She looks at the toddler and reaches into the pocket of her overalls.
Would he like some B-U-B-B-L-E-S?
She asks. And once she has the nod from me, she presents a small canister of bubbles and a little plastic blower to my beaming child before belting off towards Brunswick Street. And I'm not sure if she's on drugs or if it's just her, but whatever it is, it's contagious, and the toddler and I head home, possessed by the kind of giddy excitement one might experience having been selected from a crowd to assist a clown in a magic trick.
I don't believe you're there or anything. That's not why I talk to you. It's just that your absence feels like a presence sometimes. Not acknowledging it feels silly. Like I'm pretending. That Alistair next door is out on his little balcony with his sister. I knew they were siblings the second I saw them clap eyes on each other at his front door, their shoulders sinking at the sight of each other. Matching smiles. Grim and smug, like they just caught each other out doing the wrong thing. Just like us. I can hear them clear as day. Alistair's voice is tight and hushed and urgent.
I'm just not sure what you think I can do about it,
he's saying. I'm cleaning the snake tank while Eddie sulks in the box in the corner. Alistair's sister's voice is loud and emotional.
You know you're on her fridge. Change makers of Melbourne. Youngest property developer to blah, blah, blah. Doesn't he look great in pinstripes? Never mind you haven't so much as called her in.
Oh, here we go.
No, seriously, what is it, 6 months?
He's saying something I can't make out, but she's not listening.
Oh, please. I'm sure that rich asshole you work with could screw the poor on his own for a day while you drive that pretty little car out to see her for a couple of hours. You know what her English is like, Ali.
They're silent for a bit after that. Eddie won't know himself with the glass this clean. I hear Alistair say,
is it money you need, is that it?
Mate, you can't keep doing this. You don't get to sit here and wait for an invitation to engage with the people in your life.
And that's when I turn the Mozart on. Clarinet concerto in A major. Sad and beautiful and pure, and I don't know how many times it repeats, and I'm not thinking about anything, especially not you.
It's evening when I head out again, off for a run before it gets dark. On Brunswick Street, people leap from trams and push off on bikes. An explosion of laughter bursts from a rooftop garden, and an old guy coughs a hacking spit into the gutter. A wiry man outside the laundromat swears at a dog which cowers and whines at his feet. A woman on a passing bike yells,
Oi! Don't be a dickhead!
And turns off down a side street before Dog Man can respond. Outside the 7-Eleven, A homeless woman says,
"Thanks, love,"
to an older woman who is passing her a bag of oranges. I even see luminous Ute guy, neighbourhood creep made good, who smiles at me and says,
"Oh, out for a run, eh?"
in a way that makes me feel like I need a shower. When I return to our street, slowing to a walk and filling my lungs with as much Monday evening as I can get, I see Susanna. The birds are quiet now and she is standing still, touching the peeling paint on the front of her house. A house that must be worth I don't even know how much, and I wonder if Gail is right and Susanna is actually squatting in it.
"See the news?"
she asks as I come closer. I haven't.
"The UN,"
she says,
"just declared global warming their biggest single concern."
She leans towards me, lowers her voice.
"I've seen a draft of the next big climate report. It's not exactly bedtime reading."
I'm struggling to keep up with what she's saying. "You've seen a draft report?" I ask her.
"Yes,"
she says, like I've missed a step somewhere.
"This was my area,"
she says.
"Before..."
She gestures behind her, irritably at the path.
"They're all in Geneva at the moment, my lot, pulling their hair out."
"Sorry, did you work as a climate scientist?" I ask. She looks at me. I wonder, just for a nanosecond, if she's of sound mind. Her focus shifts.
"Alan,"
she says, and she waves at Alan, who has emerged from his house, shuffling and hunched. He stares at us both and mutters to himself darkly before heading back inside and shutting his door.
"I don't think our Alan is doing so well."
And the way she calls him our Alan reminds me that she has been watching me for who knows how long, as I have gradually become friends with the slightly strange but very gentle Alan from over the road. I ask her how long she's known him. She says,
"Since we were kids. My brother and I, well, teenagers anyway, we moved here in, I would have been, what, maybe 16? Alan and his brother both lived at home then, even though they were older."
"Oh, he's told me about the brother," I tell her. "Worked in construction," she nods.
"That was him,"
she says.
"Phil, very big in the union. They were close. Like me and my brother. Well, like we used to be."
I'm aware of myself being very careful here, not wanting to frighten her off. "Have you lived here ever since then?" I ask her, and her far-off look disappears. She sharpens her focus and looks right into my face.
"Lived here?"
she asks incredulously.
"God, no. Cambridge, Boston, Paris for a while. Had a place in Wood End for years."
"What brought you back?" I ask her, knowing full well I'm pushing my luck. She says to me, and everything about her retreats. "Sorry," I say, horrified at myself. "Sorry, I'm so sorry. That sounded, I didn't mean..."
"Family emergency,"
she says, looking at the ground.
"Well... brother emergency."
She's smiling oddly as she looks back up at me, and I think she's going to say more, but then she refocuses and I follow her gaze behind me to Alistair, up on his tiny veranda with his friend from earlier, who is slouching and jiggling her arms in a way that I gradually recognise could only mean she's tossing a salad.
"His sister,"
Susanna says to me quietly, and then, smiling,
"Not quite a brother emergency, I don't think, but family business nonetheless."
She shifts suddenly.
"Well,"
she says,
"let you get back to those gorgeous kids."
She's bringing things to a close and I obediently depart. "Send my regards to Ruth Bader Ginsburg," I say to her, and why am I such a massive dork? Science may never know. She ducks back into her crumbling house and Alistair and his sister clink their cutlery against the plates in the warm evening. They're talking a low mumble. I stand in the street fumbling with my keys. Susanna is inside now, but there are no lights on. Does the house even have power? I'm wondering this when an aeroplane appears in the sky over her place, all lit up and blinking. and I'm thinking of all the people sitting in the air up there, sitting and scratching and dozing and leaning away from their in-flight movies, looking down on Fitzroy. Lights turning on in the dark.